And we're back. Welcome once again to another Oscar Sprint Profile from your friends at Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I am co-host Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
Also Mike here. We're reviewing this movie because we both liked it. Maggie Gyllenhaal had a hot minute or two where she was getting a ton of Oscar buzz. She still has one major predictor site in her corner, site that we love to quote, award circuit over there, Clayton Davis and company. But yeah, I mean, if you like heavy drama on Netflix, this is one of those to watch, Michael. They did a nice job with this one.
This was a pleasant surprise. And of course, we're talking about The Kindergarten Teacher, which is a Netflix property. That's getting the Oscar Sprint Profile treatment from Mike, Mike, and Oscar today. If you have not joined us before for an Oscar Sprint Profile, just a quick rundown of what it is. We take the would-be, should-be, and will-be Oscar contenders for the upcoming Academy Awards, this time, of course, the 2019 Awards show, and we put them through our Oscar Sprint Profile format. Now, why is it called an Oscar Sprint Profile? Because we take the entire awards year, and we refer to that as the Oscar
Sprint. We're always sprinting. We can't run long distance.
Our heart rate is always up.
But we can get a few good wind sprints in from time to time.
And of course, these movies, we put them through a non-spoiler and spoiler review. It's basically two reviews for the price of one. The first half is a non-spoiler section. We talk about the performances, the production profile,
the production values.
Yeah, we tell you everything about the backstory to the movie before the spoiler review in the second half of every movie, which is the twists and turns in the plot and the layout and what we think about that. Don't worry, you won't get confused. There's a big dance breakdown interlude in between the two sections to let you know when one non-spoiler section ends, I should say, and the spoiler section begins.
Yes, sir.
That's the format for the Oscar Sprint Profile. Today, we're doing The Kindergarten Teacher. Also, Mike just tipped you off to that. The Netflix movie that was, we've previewed it a couple times in the monthly previews. It piqued our interest. We thought there might be a little chance for Maggie Gyllenhaal to make some noise. You said that there's one site that's still saying.
Yeah, she's right outside the top five. We'll go over an Oscar lens coming up. But Michael, you have several teachers in the family.
I do.
We've both worked in education ourselves.
They've all abducted children.
I think this one hits close to home in terms that we are judgmental on the characters of this film.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, this is This is an interesting portrayal, I think, without giving too much away.
But we're going to have hot takes for this one.
Certainly, yes. That's a good way to put it. Let's start. Mike usually starts with cast and crew, but that's not what we're doing this time, Michael.
Story inception, production notes. Like, essentially, I'm going to give you the production profile first here. This is a remake of an Israeli film of the same name. It was written and directed by Nadav Lapid. Lead actress Sirit Lehri received a bunch of film festival awards for the Israeli version, the Best Actress and the Best Director Award at the 2014 International Film Festival of India, Best Director in Buenos Aires, Janela do Recife Award for the Best Film, and the Israeli Film Critics Forum Prize at the Jerusalem Film Festival, not to mention the Best Film at Seville. So this movie ran the film festival circuits, the original film that is, and did very, very well. It was kind of a no-brainer to remake the film into the English language. Premiered at Sundance this past year, nominated for a Grand Jury Prize, won the directing award for Sarah Colangelo.
Yeah, big hit.
She co-wrote and directed this thing. She's from 2014's Little Accidents with Elizabeth Banks, Boyd Holbrook, and Chloe Sevigny. Israeli filmmaker from the original film, Nadav Lapid, also gets a story credit here. Michael, the Kindergarten Teacher, stars Maggie Gyllenhaal as Lisa Spinelli.
Sure does.
Maggie G was nominated for the Best Supporting Actress in 2010 for her role in Crazy Heart. She's won one Golden Globe for the miniseries The Honorable Woman, as well as Best Actress noms, Golden Globe noms, in Secretary, Sherry Baby, and last year she was nominated for Best Actress in a TV series, The Deuce.
Yeah, The Deuce kind of got went wayward with the Franco involvement there.
People doubled the Franco.
Oh, yeah.
Without the Dave.
Franco on Franco Crimes. Yeah.
She was also nominated, Maggie G, for one Emmy Award. I believe that was for The Honorable Woman. I didn't write it down, though. Maggie Gyllenhaal is also known from Frank, White House Down, Hysteria, Away We Go, The Dark Knight, Stranger Than Fiction, Happy Endings, Mona Lisa Smile, and Donnie Darko with Brother Jake. She's the daughter of a longtime film director, the Emmy-nominated, or the Emmy-nominom, Stephen Gyllenhaal. She's the brother of Jake Gyllenhaal, as I just said. And her career did begin acting as a child actress for five of her dad's movies.
Huh. If I were to say to you, what's the prototypical Maggie Gyllenhaal? What is she most known for? What movie are you picking?
Dark Knight, probably.
Probably, that's
just
what
because
I would
it's
say
the
too,
biggest
yeah.
film. But you know, Secretary, a lot. She's an indie darling, no question sure. about it. She's made a living with the HBO with the prestige drama mm-hmm. on television with The Deuce and The Honorable Woman.
Did
there,
you watch so. The Deuce?
I watched the first episode and I had a hard time with the violence.
Okay.
And I couldn't go further than that.
Fair enough.
I just, where I stopped. So it was very well done. It was very well done. We just have so many movies to watch. I'm at 190 this year. We're doing retrospectives. I can't do it. I watched this one four times. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
All right. So The Kindergarten Teacher also stars Gael Garcia Bernal from recent TV Here on Earth and Mozart in the Jungle. He has a voice from Coco, sang at the Oscars there. And he's also well known from Naruto, Rosewater, Blindness, The Science of Sleep, The Crime of Padre Amaro, E to Mama Tambien, and Amores Perros.
Remember Me is going to be in my head now for the rest of the day. Good song from Coco.
As it should be. Michael Chern is from Orange is the New Black, Spider-Man Homecoming, and Patriot plays Maggie G's husband, Grant Spinelli. He does a wonderful job, I thought. Rosa Salazar plays Becca. Salazar is having quite the breakout
year. I loved
her. Yeah.
I thought she was great in this.
She's the babysitter, and she's going to be in Alita Battle Angel, Bird Box. And she's from the latest Maze Runner film. And now this. So
those are three pretty experimental titles, too, to be involved with. I mean, Alita's very CGI heavy. It's,
that looks great.
It really does look good. It really does.
In terms of the visuals, I'm just like blown away.
Right.
I'm very curious.
Bird Box,
to see
of course, is the Sandra Bullock where the Quiet Place turned upside down.
Intriguing.
You can't see instead of not being able to hear.
Intriguing filmography this year from Rosa Salazar. No question. I still want to see the last Blade Runner film. It's on VOD right now. I saw the first two. I read the first book. I liked the book. I liked the first film. The second film, I didn't love it. So
you
now
said Blade Runner.
Blade Runner or Maze Runner.
Maze Runner, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Maze Runner.
Say they released another one?
The Blade Runner trilogy? Yes! No. Newcomer.
2049 2.
Newcomer and child actor Parker Savak plays Jimmy Roy in this.
He was great, too. Be careful working with kids, but man, he knocked this out of the park, I thought.
And The Kindergarten Teacher also stars Otto Blanks and Wood, Libya Pugh, Carter Kojima, Jillian Panalilio. Wow, what a hell of a name.
You got that.
Anna Baryshnikov, Noah Rhodes, Daisy Tahan, Haley Murphy, Sam Jules, and Carson Grant Michael.
Our apologies, as always. If we do mispronounce these names, we're doing our best.
Apologies.
Yeah. Do some specs for The Kindergarten Teacher, written by Nadav Lapid. He gets the based on and screenplay by credits, who wrote and directed the 2015 original movie, which was released in Hebrew for Israel and France back in 2015, like I said. Sarah Colangelo also gets a screenplay credit as well. She also was the director of this. This film debuted January 19th of this past year at Sundance and went wide on Netflix October 12th, about a month ago now. 97-minute runtime on an R rating. Maven Pictures, Paper Chase Pictures, and Pi Films are the production companies. Netflix clearly the distributor of this film. This version is outpacing its predecessor. Right now, the critical scores are fairly high for it, at least on the critical side. Mm-hmm. Certified Fresh, 88% Rotten Tomato rating on 50 critical reviews, 44 of those being positive. The average critic score is 7.2 out of 10. That's
solid.
Out there. Yeah. The audience score, though, is down to a 67%.
I could see that.
Yeah, I can too. And also, it's not getting audience feedback on Rotten Tomatoes, on either platform, really. 393 ratings.
All right, let's hype up an indie here. Let's do that.
The average audience score is a 3.7 out of 5 for Rotten Tomatoes. 6.7 IMDb rating is in line with that as well. But again, only 3,213 reviews as of last check from IMDb to substantiate that rating. Carries a 76 Meta rating and 20 critical reviews from Metacritic. So again, only 20 reviews for a movie that's been out for a month. Actually, a movie that came out in January, so critics got their hands on it a long time ago, and still not many have seen it. So maybe this we can spur some people to see it. Mike told you about the awards history. It's got a couple nominations to its name, the Duvel Film Festival, Ghent International Film Festival. The only win right now it has is that directing award that went to Sarah Colangelo from Sundance. So this is an award winner that has a lineage to it already, and it's a major award. Sundance doesn't give out those awards lightly. They carry some prestige. And like we said, when we get to the Oscar lens, we're going to talk about how there is an outside chance for this to make some noise come Oscar Sunday.
Yeah, Sarah Colangelo did a phenomenal job.
Totally agree there.
Yeah, we'll get to her in the production values for sure. Here's the premise, Mike. Writer, director, Sarah Colangelo's sophomore feature film is based on the 2014 Israeli film of the same name. Maggie Gyllenhaal plays a 40-year-old married kindergarten teacher living in Staten Island who is terminally bored with her banal middle-class existence when she becomes convinced that her 5-year-old student is a budding poetic genius. She decides to nurture his talents in a reckless and questionable manner.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. That's pretty much exactly what this movie is, I think.
I think I'm going to do more of a teaser review here, but in terms of expectations, I knew it was a prestige drama on Netflix. I was in, and Maggie Gyllenhaal got a lot of buzz, but in terms of my teaser review, I think I cringed from this trailer onward through the film. I yelled at the TV screen during my first watch.
Yeah.
This story swept me up. It's a well-made movie. It's a well-told story, and there's a surprising amount of depth to this plot that upon rewatch, several rewatches, which is, it's kind of an easy film to rewatch, go figure. Maggie Gyllenhaal's performance is phenomenal, and we'll gush about her, but this movie surprised me on many levels. I did not get what I expected.
I expected to rest on Maggie Gyllenhaal for this, right? And my enjoyment of this, I think, was going to be predicated on whatever she brought to the table.
Right.
And I think she really did a phenomenal job, and like you, I was swept up in the story when I watched it as well. I think it's one of those things where we're in the moment. It's something that's going to be very enrapturing and enveloping, and you're going to be there for the whole thing. I don't know that it stuck with me afterwards, so I don't know that it's like one of my favorite pictures of the year or anything like that, but certainly you get your money's worth if you're going to sit down and watch this.
So in terms of those production values, I'm going to praise the overall composition. I thought everything really works well, Michael. Kind of buzzed through them here, but I love the cinematography, the close-ups on Maggie Gyllenhaal, on how it focuses on her face when she's dealing with the kids. You know, you don't really see a lot of the kids acting. It's all about her.
Yeah.
It's about her process of teaching. She's a confident teacher, but I also love the sad score of the film. Like, the score is alarming.
Score as well. I have that in here.
And it's a juxtaposition, as you like to use that big word often.
I do.
I just looked it up 5 minutes ago. Now I understand it. And it's a juxtaposition with the whole rest of the character and her enthusiasm. And then you have this sad score because she's headed full-blown midlife crisis.
Pretty much, yeah.
So I'm amazed at these production values. They're understated. They're solid. They serve the film. And they, of course, serve a showcase for Maggie G.
Yeah, this is one of the rare ones as far as production values goes that we usually concentrate on how well something shot and how the cinematography enhances the viewing experiences. I would actually say the score might have been more important than this one. Then I wasn't like blown away by any of establishing shots or cinematography in this one,
right,
as far as camera tricks or camera work, but the score really did play a big role in my watching and viewing experience as well.
It
was, again, to me, this is all about the acting, specifically the acting of Maggie Gyllenhaal.
And to get into performances, I thought the ensemble did a terrific job. I'm very impressed with Michael Chern is the husband. I mean, he's got some great scenes with miles of subtext going
on. I'm glad we can get into that because he was nice. I thought he was great, but I wasn't in love with him. But I'm glad to hear your pitch.
Rosa Salazar and Gael Garcia Bernal, they got some loaded scenes as well. They got a lot of motivations going on. And of course, Maggie Gyllenhaal, full-blown midlife crisis that she's not recognizing. And I think that's very important for writing to jump into that next. You can't have your characters understand their neuroses. If you do, then it's a different kind of a movie. It's not even a, well, it's more of a comedy when they're like kind of,
or it's Glass.
Okay. Yes, it's Sarah Paulson's involved telling you what your neuroses are. But they can't understand what their faults are. That's very, very important. And she is totally blindsided at every turn by another layer being exposed of her miscalculation of what's happening.
Yeah, and she's so stubbornly against reality,
which is another huge writing point. She needs to be that kind of willful protagonist.
Yeah.
If you have a milquetoast protagonist, you don't have a good story. This character is gung-ho about what she believes once she believes it, and the fact that she keeps driving through, getting rejected at every stage, is a great writing trope for any story, never mind a story like this. I do think that the Gael Garcia Bernal is kind of a small-time toned down version of his Mozart in the Jungle composer character. So if people know that one. It's kind of fun. It's kind of funny to see him more of a straight laced, yeah. Like the community theater version of that.
Okay.
You know, he's totally larger than life as a composer of a New York symphony, but here he is, you know, with less ticks, but he's still got that vibe. You still believe him from the jump. Just the second he's on screen, he's Mozart in the Jungle guy. And I get what he's saying about poetry, and I almost give him too much credit.
Were you in love with him too?
He's great. He's great in everything.
Did he sweep you off his feet?
Well, he definitely sweeps Maggie G. Here we have the kids doing a nice job, and we've talked.
Yeah. There's a lot of danger in working with kids, and we talk about that all the time, and we can go back all the way back to when we reviewed, like, the full Monty, the problems we had with the kid, how we took away from that one.
Yeah. You could have screwed this up 1,000 times over.
Without question.
But you have Maggie Gyllenhaal as the focus. I think she's ad-libbing or improvising.
Playing off what he gives her, yeah.
I think she's actually teaching kids in kindergarten class, and they just have a camera filming it. I just can't stop thinking
about what that must have been like, the chemistry between them in between takes, where she's like being so convincing as this manipulative, psychotic, borderline psychotic or depressive person.
Right.
And, you know, in between takes, she has to, like, come back and be like, that's not really me. I'm me. And now the kid thinks that she's, like, this some kind of, you know, right, like bipolar disorder type person.
Look, still learn your alphabet, kid. Still trust that, you know, your teachers will not steer you so wrong.
Right. Aren't going to abduct you.
But she does a great job with all the teaching scenes. And it's not just with Jimmy Roy's character, Parker Servac. It's with all the other kids as
She's
well.
She's got the great face to play a preschool or elementary teacher mm-hmm. so well. You got to hide your emotions, but at the same time, you can't, like, fool your eyes when you want to be outraged or sad.
And that's the great part of the performance, yeah, because the subtext, the neurosis is all creeping through what she's doing, right, with the kids in every scene. She can't hide it. It's bubbling to the surface and it's overflowing, you know, by the midpoint of this movie. And that's the greatness in this performance. I love the cast here. Like I said, this screenplay, to get into some script thoughts, hits a lot of the beats you need to hit. We're taught screenwriting formulas, even though you kind of go here and there with those. But this hits a lot of story formulas for me, and it's even more efficient at them. You're supposed to get an inciting incident 15 minutes in. I timed it last night. It was 8 minutes in, where you already have the setup, and everything's set up. The poetry class is set up. The mundane house life is set up. The classwork is set up. She's in the class. That's all done in 8 minutes, and then boom, the poem. The poem drops from Parker. And that's your first 8 minutes of the movie, and it really, really works. And it's super efficient by the writers. I think we unravel her midlife crisis, and it totally reaches a fever pitch at the midpoint. And then you don't think it can get any crazier. And then, of course, your act two climax is insane. So I absolutely love that. And it's great writing. And I give credit to Nadav Lapid. I give credit to Sarah Colangelo here. It's a really strong composition. You're dealing with the mundane in the everyday as well.
Yeah, and I thought that was important too, as far as the screenwriting goes, because you immediately, from the opening scenes of this movie, you're set up that this is an ordinary, mundane is a good word, life of this regular school teacher.
But you're getting high drama in those scenes.
Oh, it
you're
works
getting
out.
Tons of subtext.
Yeah, it
you're
works
getting
out.
A conflict that I never thought was possible. Like, you think, I thought back to my kindergarten days, and what do I think back to my kindergarten days? I think back to all happy stuff. I think back to the wonderful teacher.
I colored the duck blue because
we don't think to weird stuff back in kindergarten, right, or do you? I don't know.
Well, we don't have the perspective of what was actually going on from an adult POV back in those days. You know what I mean?
Fascinating. Right. So this movie brings us back in crazy ways, but yet, like, I can't remember like first grade or third grade. I can remember kindergarten for some crazy reason. Yeah.
Were you abducted by your teacher?
No. Okay. She was a
Are
saint.
You a poetic savant?
I that's still to be determined.
All right. Fair.
I'm holding out hope.
One of these days.
I think they did a great job with this script. I've been gushing. So to get into an Oscar lens here, Michael, best actress, Maggie Gyllenhaal, is 9th on award circuit right now. She was 7th a few weeks ago. I think that she does have a puncher's chance because she's still considered as a possibility in the Feinberg forecast as well. So those are two
she's
strong
hanging
pundits.
On. Yeah. Like we said, this came out a month ago. So if any momentum was going to subside, there's been really no marketing push for this movie, for this performance outside of word of mouth and film Twitter and podcasts like ours and others. So if she's going to have that breakthrough, it's going to be well deserved.
In the best actor or actress categories, we've seen worse performances, much worse performances nominated. So this is a very, very good performance.
Gun to your head, is she in your top five right now?
She is in my top five right now. Cool. So I think she's very, very strong. She's at my number five. And it's possible she'll get bumped by a Viola Davis or something, and that's most probable, I would say. But I think this is a very strong movie. I'm glad we got the chance to review it today. She doesn't show up on Next Best Picture or Gold Derby as of now. That's a huge warning sign. But again, Feinberg loves it. Award circuit loves it, so that's points in her favor. I don't think Colangelo is going to get any the credit that she's due, even though Sundance pinned her as a best director right off the bat. I would say if people revisited this movie or visited this movie, they should take notice of Sarah Colangelo, and she might show up down the line.
I would be interested to see the original Israeli version and see how much was borrowed from in this, to see how much, what the degree of difficulty was, how much more it was changed and done, what Colangelo herself had the imprint on. I would love to see that, but I agree with you in that it was well directed, certainly phenomenally acted, and I think there's a lot here. In these types of movies where there's basically the inherent drama and there's it's a really an engrossing experience for the viewer, you kind of have to at least default to the director doing a great job, don't you? Even if you don't realize what they're doing,
they're in control. Right. They're conducting the orchestra, they're conducting the symphony of it all, and this composition overall flows. Like, there's not a wasted scene.
No.
And it's amazing how A, B, and C foreshadow D, E, and F.
Right.
And it's amazing how early things pay off later. It's very well written, and I'm going to get into some of that in spoilers. But in terms of some final thoughts here, Michael, again, this is an emotional story again.
Very.
We get visceral reactions to what the characters are doing, and I want the characters to do different things, of course. Well, I want them to make different decisions in this film.
I think if you have any teachers in your life, certainly if you have any children in your life that you care for, it's just easily something that you can easily get lost in.
You freak out about
feel it. Rage and anger.
It gets
and,
a rise out
yeah,
of us.
Depression about, yeah, without question. And it does a great job. But again, I default back to that's a phenomenal job by Maggie Gyllenhaal, phenomenal script writing, and again, the flow of this, which has to be Sarah Colangelo's deft touch here, is just great job, and it's definitely worth a watch.
And yet, when we get into the nuances of the story, I really loved how this movie plays upon rewatch. It is dense, and for screenwriters out there, for storytellers out there, for actors and actresses out there, study this movie. This is a strong film, and it's going under the radar right now. That's why we wanted to do this.
Yeah, and it is one of those under the radar ones in that this is not going to get, especially in this year where the screenplays categories seem to be so loaded, this isn't going to get a lot of shine, especially adapted screenplay. It's not going to get a lot of shine and notice, but it's definitely worth noticing.
Hey, let's hope we can hype it up once more, at least for the Independent Spirit Awards, et cetera, when those come due. But for now, it's a watch for us, and it's an emotional story, so beware of that fact, but we can dance.
Let's dance. Spoilers ahead!
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
Spoilers! This is the spoiler section for the Oscar Sprint profile of The Kindergarten Teacher, brought to you by Mike, Mike, and Oscar. If you have not seen the movie yet, or if you do not want to hear the spoilers involved in this movie, this is a good place for you to hit pause, go watch the movie for yourself, and then come back and hit play. We'll be waiting for you when you do. If you have seen the movie already, if you do not care about it being spoiled, or if you are interested to hear about the twists and turns, that's what you're going to get from here on out. It's all spoilers all the times for Netflix's The Kindergarten Teacher, the Maggie Gyllenhaal property, brought to you by Mike, Mike, and Oscar and their Oscar Sprint profile. profiles. Michael, we start this section usually with some carryover, so what do we have?
The main carryover for me is I want to point out the type of movie that Maggie Gyllenhaal's character thinks she's in and then okay. the actual movie she's in.
Very cool.
Because
all right.
she thinks she's in kind of a Good Will Hunting
yes.
scenario.
Yes.
Right? She thinks she is Robin Williams, or she thinks she's Stellan Skarsgård, and she's discovering this prodigy.
I'm going to take you under my wing, and it's for your benefit, and you don't know that yet, but I do.
And she's like hearing that epic music yeah. from Mr. Holland's
Except
opus.
Except this is what would
head.
Actually happen if somebody did that in real life.
And yet,
as
yeah.
opposed to the Good Will Hunting. Yes,
and
totally.
Yet Sarah Colangelo, with every single scene, with the characterization of this movie, is batting her down with what all the other characters are doing.
With life!
With life, with,
yeah, with
and
mean,
of course with the score, with the production values, with the cinematography.
Absolutely, and that's kind of where, you know, the Good Will Hunting is the positive side. That's the cinematic side of this story being told. Mm-hmm. This is like the reality side of this story being told, right? This is what 9 times out of 10 would happen under these circumstances.
Yes.
And it's what keeps it so grounded and true to life and real and gritty. If you don't know the story, Maggie Gyllenhaal is a kindergarten teacher. She has this child in her class who she discovers has an affinity for poetry.
Right.
She herself, of course, is mundane and leading this boring life and looking for a higher purpose that she thinks is in her.
Mike took 7 minutes to go through that. This movie only took 8. No, I'm kidding. I'm breaking you both.
That was good. And so she's taking these nighttime poetry classes. She actually recites in her nighttime poetry class one of the poems that this child said in her kindergarten class. Yeah. It's a huge hit. So she makes the decision onto herself, yeah. this kid is a prodigy. I'm going to cultivate but his goods.
She's also doing wrong right from the jump.
Oh, yeah.
So she's taking this kid's poem as it was hers, and she's got this motive of just trying to get credit as an artist, but stealing from somebody
do
else,
you,
plagiarizing.
Do you think the kid is actually a poetic savant, or do you think the nighttime poetry teacher is a terrible teacher?
I think the kid is advanced, there's no question, but I think later in the film, I'll go over that Gael Garcia Bernal scene where he's like not that impressed with the kid. Everybody's impressed. It's good for a kid. It's great.
Right.
But if he thought he had the next Mozart, obviously he doesn't. If he thought that, then he wouldn't have cared about her underhanded dealings.
Right.
And he would have said, all right, let me help you help him. And he doesn't. And he just like, get the hell away from me. I don't know what the hell you're doing. So of course not. And I think the contrast between the woman with the beat poetry, like the jam, she's spitting rhymes and crushing it.
Yeah.
And the quality of
right.
that poem, even though it's kind of edgy, which is also on purpose. I love that scene.
So me too.
And then
so
the kid,
a kid does not belong there.
And then the kid says this very elemental
nice
poem.
Nice two-line poem.
Nice, yeah. yeah, a couple-line poem, and they're fine. But compared to what we just
exactly.
listened to,
yeah.
of course, it's not on the same level. We don't have Mozart here. So no, the answer to your question is no.
That's how
this
I
kid
feel
is
as well.
Advanced. He's not a prodigy. He's not.
He has an artistic side to him.
Yes.
Which should be cultivated in the right way.
And it's fun because it's fun. It's crazy because the uncle was probably the same kind of kid, and the uncle's brother, the father of Jimmy, is probably remembers his brother the same way.
Right.
And the brother kind of cultivates the kid's liking of poetry a little bit. And the brother was looking at her like she's a total lunatic.
So this
when
is,
she
this
visits
is,
him.
This is where we're breaking down in the. They give you a little bit more of the plot. Jimmy is the name of this 5-year-old boy. He's the poetic savant by Maggie Gyllenhaal's character's judgment. Maggie Gyllenhaal wants to take him and basically cultivate him his talents personally herself because
these other
thinks,
kids are barely writing their essays
right.
and this kid's spitting
exactly.
you know some yeah. 3-syllable words.
Well, basically what he's doing is walking around and talking to himself, right?
Yeah.
Which could be an indicator of something else, but that's not the argument I want to make.
True.
So she goes to his father. His father just wants his kid to have a normal life. He doesn't want to do these big poetry sessions. He wants him to play baseball, grow up with a normal kid. His uncle is, like you said, is this artistic person, has
right.
this fire within him too, but still also doesn't approve of him going off the beaten path.
Screenwriting tropes, because those are two tests, right, that the hero has to face.
100%.
Slam down in the test trying to sell the babysitter. Slam down in the test of trying to sell the uncle. Slam down in the test of trying to convince the father that she has a young Mozart. And her sales job, the hard sell of it all, is escalating throughout those test phases. This is all leading to the midpoint of the film, really, the Act 2 climax there, crisis and climax at the poetry slam.
There's so much that has to go right to get to these points, too. Like, if Gael Garcia Bernal didn't approve of her, there's one scene where she is in the nighttime poetry class, and she recites another of Jimmy's poems. that had nothing to do with the assignment, the homework assignment.
Right.
And instead of getting chastised or saying you shouldn't do that, she's lauded by Gael Garcia Bernal saying, what a great job. It's okay if you don't listen to my instructions for homework. This is a beautiful right. poem.
And it's amazing how she misreads all these scenes. She misreads that as validation for what she's right. doing when she doesn't take into consideration her double underhandedness.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you're stealing from a 5-year-old.
Right. And she ignores that. And it's great writing because it's a scene loaded with conflict yeah. internally and externally. There's conflict in the class. There's conflict in within her in letting out the secret shame that she has of using someone else's poem. And there's conflict that looking ahead, foreshadowing what's going on, we see her misreading the situation, saying, all right, let me go another step. And yet, of course, it's slamming her down that this is the wrong thing to do. Everybody in the audience knows it, but she doesn't.
And she's desperate for some kind of higher purpose, whether it's within yes. herself or with her children are starting to grow up into 20-year-old. Into
the B story yeah. of her family illuminates this so well. Because
it's awesome. Very well done.
It pushes her into that midlife crisis moment. Her daughter wants to be more social, going to college. Her daughter
doesn't want to play instruments anymore. Right. Doesn't. Yep.
So she lost that connection with raising her family. Like, her kids want to leave the nest now, right. basically. The son wants to go to the military instead of college. The husband is trying to connect with her, but it's really not working. It's failing at every step. I thought those scenes escalate like crazy, too. Like, he wants to read the poem in that first scene with her at the dinner table, and she allows him to read the poem, and it doesn't go well. The next scene where he has an argument, a screaming at her son argument, where she just tells him, you're going to go fight for oil, blah, blah, blah. It's a huge emotional scene where she's losing her wigwam. And then the husband's trying to just make it all better by, you know, banging each other. After
right.
that, which is total failure.
Well, the husband is desperate. I got that reading, too, that the husband is just desperate for some kind of affection from her.
Exactly.
You know, like we got to, I'm in a loveless marriage. I can tell you I'm losing you.
So that culminates, right, with them in bed, and he asks her, are you proud of the kids? And she doesn't even recognize what he's talking about.
Right.
What, our kids? And it's crazy how that B story escalates. And then, of course, she uses that to tell her warped brain at this point, I better make a final supper, a beautiful dinner for my kids, to tell them I'm proud of them before I commit this felony.
Her ego is out of control on this.
Yes.
It's absolutely out of control because she thinks she knows best and she's operating on this holier-than-thou plane when the reality is that she just doesn't ever take stock of what's really going on around her.
So it's a heartbreaking story. Of course, the poetry slam is a crazy plot point.
Yeah, let's work up to that so yep. we can catch up the plot real quick. So she's presenting Jimmy's poems in this poetry class. Eventually she goes for extra help, and the poetry teacher tells her about this poetry slam that's happening.
Now, at the very important point in that scene is he also tells the guy who's like fifth best in the class to come, like, I'll see you at the poetry slam.
Oh, when he's leaving. A good point.
So
that's
it's not
a good point.
Like, this is a special invitation. He tells like all
everybody
his...
about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she wants to bring Jimmy to this poetry slam.
Yes.
And so she asks Jimmy's father if mm-hmm. she can do it. A great scene between her and Jimmy's father as she is manipulating, willing to, first of all, she throws the babysitter under the bus.
Right.
When she doesn't need to. Oh, by the way, the babysitter's late picking your son up every day. You might want to know that.
Yep.
So babysitter is fired. She offers to help the father.
Right.
I can watch Jimmy if you're going to fire her. I'll watch him for a couple hours every day after school. It'd be my honor.
I'm sufficiently scared at this point.
Yep.
Very good.
Father buys it hook, line, and sinker. Just have him home by 6 o'clock, 6:30 every night. Okay, no problem. Hey, can he come to me to this poetry class? Father says no, he has baseball. I can't go to the poetry slam. So she, already having established that she has control over this yep. kid's life, and basically he has an absentee father and nobody at home watching over him,
right.
except for this Russian babysitter now at this point.
Right.
She takes it upon herself to kidnap him, Jimmy, take him to the poetry slam in Manhattan, and then bring him back to her house and spend the night, right?
And it's crazy because she, in a very real way, grooms him for this, the boy, by taking him aside in class during nap time and giving him a mini poetry lesson in the bathroom, by taking him in front of the in the auditorium and giving him lessons on how to project his voice to read.
So disturbing.
And then calling him on the phone, having them exchange cell phone numbers.
That's the sickest part. In school, on school hours, on school grounds, she says, hey, let me have your cell phone, because all five-year-olds have cell phones these days, of course. Right. Puts her number in his cell phone and then insists throughout the movie on a couple different times. Anytime you have a poem, call me. Don't tell anyone else. Call me. I'll write it down. And sometimes it's okay for teachers to call their students at night just to say hi.
Isn't that the worst line ever, the scariest line ever?
Shit.
But it's also the A story colliding with the B story at the early act two, where she is having a crisis with her family. She just went on a soliloquy with her daughter, who's smoking a joint at the pool party, at the makeshift pool party that her and her friends are having. They already got their work done, so they think they can do whatever they want. And she's basically getting all of her life choices thrown up into her face with the daughter, who she's embarrassing in front of her daughter's boyfriend, right, in that scene, or whatever the guy is.
Right.
So it's just like this crisis, and then her husband tries to connect with her about it, and she just, you know, just says, throws him aside once again. So
they start making love, and then she gets a phone call in the middle of them making love from Jimmy, and she stops everything on a dime because she has to write down this poem from this five-year-old kid.
And he's devastated by this, even though, of course, it's like the worst time for them to do this after their son, they have
an argument with their son about going to the military.
With their son. I mean, she's totally, nobody's in the headspace for anything fun after that. Never mind that kind of fun.
Just a cringe fest.
Oh, cringe fest is a great word for it. So yes, we're getting to that midpoint, and she's also grooming him in a very creepy way, right? This little boy, like I said, and before she takes him out on the big outing, the big night out with the tux and all that, or the suit, she takes him to the museum the day before and turns him in late to the babysitter, who's very upset with
the new babysitter now, since, yeah.
She's doing all kinds of things. She's doing all kinds of wrong. She's lying to everybody. She lies to the kid to the father of the baseball friend who was supposed to go to baseball.
Yeah, she
that
leaves
night.
The conversation with Jimmy's father at, okay, he won't go to this thing with me. He'll go to baseball instead. And then takes it upon herself to lie to Jimmy's ride to baseball that night.
That kid is sick.
Jimmy's
acting sick.
Jimmy's sick. He can't go. I think it's better if I just watch him here. It's okay. I told his father already.
No, she told the father that Jimmy's friend, who's going to baseball, looks sick all day and probably should keep him home tomorrow and home from baseball tonight. So it's even more underhanded. Yeah, it's terrible. And so she's super duper manipulative throughout all of this, Michael, and it's crazy how it all escalates. Now, the obvious parallel and the scariest thing about this movie is that this really happens with pedophiles the world around. And that's the creepiest thing. That's not her character, as far as we know, at any point in this movie. But like,
it toes that line between involvement for
we're
sure.
We're freaking out. And the fact that she calls the kid after she's upset with the family.
Just to say hi.
Like it's some secret whatever affair. It's the grossest thing in the world. So
we have this woman. They're on their way to the poetry. Before we get to that scene, and I'm sorry for keep backtracking, but it's important to highlight. Before we get to that scene, she does visit Gael Garcia Bernal at his office hours because she wants to present a poem that she wrote.
Right.
Because she is starting to, I guess, have a realization that things are slipping away from her, and she may not be doing everything so by the book, and she may not be cultivating this young kid. Yeah. Maybe she is doing this for her own gain as opposed to his. So she goes to her nighttime poetry class teacher's office hours to present a poem to him that she wrote on her own. And he's like, oh, it's not bad. It's not as good as your other ones, which are, of course, the ones she stole from Jimmy, but it's not bad. He comes on to her in that moment. She rejects him. And then he tells her, and this is how you know, it's all ego for her. It's all just ego masturbation for her character. Because I didn't notice you at first, but now after seeing you read these poems and recite these poems, I notice there's a huge artist inside you. You see the world in a very lovely way and blah, blah. All he does is stroke her ego just the tiniest bit for this community college nighttime poetry class teacher. And she throws herself at him now, and they end up having sex in his office.
So talk about unreliable mentors, Michael. And it's scary because, you know, you have the parallel between their relationship, the teacher and the student.
Right.
And then you're scared right. to death exactly. of the other relationship between her and little Jimmy. So that's the scariest thing. She's being mentored in an unethical way by him.
Right.
I mean, he's crossing all kinds of lines. We've talked about this before. I don't care how old you are. If you're breaking that trust, if you're breaking that oath, that secret, that special pact between a teacher and a student and taking that power dynamic.
Yeah.
And again, I don't care if you know you're teaching somebody who's 40 years older than you.
It just proves to you that anyone in a position of power is still just a terrible, terrible human being.
Power corrupts.
An awful human being. So we get to the poetry slam finally. Mm-hmm. She has stolen Jimmy away. She's essentially kidnapped him. He presents at the poetry slam. He goes on after this woman, like we talked about, who puts us this awesome.
Crushing it.
Awesome.
And
poem.
How inappropriate do you feel for that little boy? Is there. She's talking about her pussy up
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
And it's a totally adult.
Very graphic, very adult. And Jimmy's right there, and I thought it was a great job to show Jimmy at different times during it. It's a room full of adults, and he is just there taking it all in because
from
he has
across
no
the room, Gael Garcia Bernal is looking at her like, "What the hell is going on?"
Right.
She's not giving me the cold shoulder for what just happened with us a day before, week before, whatever it was. I don't want to go anywhere near her because she's got a 6-year-old with her, and it's just totally inappropriate.
And he doesn't belong here. This is not a place for him. I don't know what she's doing. Yeah. So Jimmy's time to recite his poem, and he does. He recites two poems. Very well.
Again, the contrast is just staggering.
Off. He doesn't belong there.
She's behind him, awkwardly standing up against the wall with a blank expression, and then is kind of upset at the audience for not handling it well. But then she's kind of validated a little bit for how the audience questions him. And then
So Jimmy gives his poems, and the audience is like, "Well, did you write these?" Speaking to Maggie Gyllenhaal,
is he a gimmick?
Yeah, is he basically? Like, are you writing this through the lens of him? And she says, "No, these are his poems." And the audience is like, "Oh, okay, good job, kid.
Good job, kid. This is great for a kid. Great for a kid."
Exactly. And she's taken aback by the fact that they don't see the beauty and the genius in him that she does. So she storms off.
Now, she prepped him for a question. Who is Anna, right, in one of the poems?
Yes.
And somebody asks the little boy that, and the little boy says, and she prepared him for this, and the little boy says, "Well, it's anybody you love." Set up, her heart's swelling, and for me, it's my Becca, my kindergarten teacher's assistant.
Yeah.
The ordering of that line of dialogue is just soul crushing for her. She literally walks off stage into the bathroom,
starts
crying
sobbing.
Her eyes out. She's got the boy with her. Then she, in a totally irresponsible thing, I'm at a bar in the middle of New York City. Just wait outside the door. Go somewhere unsupervised and let me cry.
Because she doesn't care about the kid.
Yeah.
It's a joke. It's all a facade, and it's all ego stroking on her part. I am the only one that can cultivate this young boy's genius. I have the guidance. I have the foresight. But when it comes time to when your ego gets hurt a little bit, it's
yes.
Go run and play, kid. I can't deal with you right now.
Exactly. Yeah. And putting him in potential
danger.
Harm's way.
Yeah.
WTF there. And it's just so inappropriate.
So Jimmy's father finds out that she did essentially kidnap him, sleep at her place. He's furious. He takes Jimmy out of her kindergarten class.
And again, it's just so effed up because she just got out of this and now she's trying to jump her husband's bones in bed. That night where Jimmy's sleeping downstairs, she's trying
to
cuddle up with her husband. And I just feel like that's just so weird.
Yeah.
You know, just the juxtaposition. Position. I'm using that word again and again today because I just learned it. It's just going back to back and it's just like, ew!
Right. So, Jimmy's father, next day at school, has taken Jimmy out of the class. He calls Maggie Gyllenhaal to basically chastise her and say, "What the hell are you doing?
You think it's going to explode. Like, she's going to get in trouble now."
Right.
And she should have gotten in trouble now. Big trouble. And this should have been the final warning. Like, she should have her head on her shoulders enough to know that I overstepped lines.
I screwed up
big time. I should have read this situation and it should the delusion
this should be a come to Jesus moment.
The delusion should fade at this
right.
point, but no, she's full-blown crisis mode. The delusions
she
are getting worse.
She tries to find these outlets for her passion that has been misplaced within Jimmy. She's cuddling up to her husband. She's making all these big meals. She's trying to cook dinner.
She does a last supper for her family, essentially.
You think you took that as that?
Yeah.
She wanted to
do something big before she leaves because later on she tells the boy that here are our plans. We're going to publish this book together.
Right.
We're going to write poems together out in the woods or whatever, wherever we go to run away from society. So she's leaving her family for a time, and she wanted to do something nice for them the night before she leaves.
Interesting. All right, you're more in tune with this. I thought it was just her trying to find a place that she can fill that Jimmy-sized hole in her creativity and in her stimulation. Regardless, she goes to Jimmy's new kindergarten.
Right.
Breaks him out, tells him how to break out of the locked cage that he's in because the kids are playing recess.
The kid is groomed to the point where he'll obey her in that moment, and it's just disgusting and crazy. And she followed the father to the kindergarten, so she stalked and kidnapped.
Gross. So she ends up taking Jimmy to this basically cabin in the woods, this motel by the lake, this woodside motel.
They have a day at the lake beach.
Yeah, she's out tanning with this 6-year-old sitting right next to her. Oh, God. It all culminates in they had a big day out. They're back at the motel room. It's just the two of them. Nobody knows where
they
are.
She's writing down his poems.
Jimmy goes to take a shower. Jimmy comes out of the shower.
Again, I think it's pointed. The fact that the kid is naked in the shower, realizing what's happening.
Right.
That's when he's at his most vulnerable. That's when he comes out of there, and it's very awkward, like they're going to get changed. The boy's going to get changed out there, put his shirt on, his used shirt on. Again, he's whatever after a shower. And then she's like, no, it's my turn to shower now. And now the kid freaks out, like she's naked in there.
Right.
So, again, I don't think these are subtle.
I'm with you. And I think that was told very well. I mean, it's just you're very on edge and unsettling because you're getting – this is a pedophile. It's not, right?
It's not.
She doesn't cross that line, but this is what we're all this is how this happens. This is what this does. This is where these people, oh God. And so she takes a shower, and Jimmy has the wherewithal to lock her in the bathroom.
Right.
And wants to call for help, doesn't know how to. She, through the locked shower door, walks him through how to call 911.
To me, this is the best scene in the movie.
Because I agree.
Leading into this, she is essentially just her delusions at its height, even in the face of this kid not cooperating. Now she knows, everybody's rejected me up to this point. Now the kid is rejecting me calling the police. And she's trying to tell him, no, here's my grand plan. We're gonna write all these poems for months in the woods. We're going to publish a book together. This is the grand plan, Jimmy. Stay with me. But the saving grace to her character, she realizes that she's not a pedophile. She realizes the kid is afraid, even momentarily.
Right.
And her maternal instincts kick in, or her instincts as the kindergarten teacher kick in, and she teaches the boy how to turn her in.
Right.
And walking that's a, her, it's a big scene. It's a big dilemma. Places.
And I also, in that scene, I still don't know if she was willing to admit what she was doing was wrong, or if it was just a reaction of, like you said, just totally, I don't want to put this kid in fear.
She also gives him the speech that the world is going to throw
exactly.
you away. So she does come to grips with her... with the fact that this is not going to work. So you're right that I don't know the distinction if she realizes
what
she's
saying,
wrong.
Right,
I think there's some of that. But
she just realizes he's finally against her.
Right.
She fights against it
for a minute there, which puts her in the dilemma. Do I now really kidnap the kid against
his
will?
Right. And there is a moment there where you're like, oh, my God.
She's surging again. She's doing what she's done the whole script is go misread the situation. And she thinks this is the time to tell him her whole plan of all the wonderfulness in their future. And of course, she finally comes to her senses and helps him turn her in. Then it's a very shameful dressing out. She's in a towel. She comes out and she shamefully
dresses. She says, Jimmy, can I get dressed before the cops come? And that was a terrifying moment as well, because that at that point, you're like, if he unlocks this door, is she going to go nuts and just take him away again? No. But no.
Yeah, finally she does change. Somewhat the right thing here.
And there is that moment where after she's dressed and they're waiting for the cops, Jimmy takes her hand because he's a scared 5-year-old child. And this is basically his only mother figure that he's had in who knows how long.
Yes.
His parents had a messy divorce, we were told. Takes her hand, and there's this long silence of the two of them just breathing, holding hands together like a mother and a son, a kindergarten teacher and a student. And then we get the loud knock at the door, which is the cops coming in and taking her away, taking him away. The movie doesn't end, though, before we see Jimmy yelling out that, wait a minute, I have a poem. I have a poem. I need somebody to hear this, because he's, again, been so used to and so Pavlov dogged into needing to tell her when every time he has a poem.
I mean, there's a kernel of truth to what she's trying to do in the sense that this kid is advanced. You know, he does need support.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad that he doesn't have any of that support. And in the end of this movie, you know, yes, he could be cultivated as an artist, but you don't need to kidnap him to do it. Just, a lot of big scenes, a lot of big showdowns in this film. It really escalates in terms of the narrative structure, in terms of her characterization. Yet again, I'm thrilled with it. That scene with the husband in bed, I kind of glossed over it before, but where he asks her if she's proud of the kids. Again, I really think that he's asking her if are you proud of our lives together? Are you proud of me? I mean, there's a ton of loaded subtext in that scene. That happens throughout this story and throughout the screenplay. It's just a loaded script, and the fact that you have a grooming of a child to be kidnapped, that whole undercurrent, which is the creepiest thing and the scariest thing ever, and why we're screaming at the TV.
Yeah, and this is how you know it's a well-written script and a well-directed movie, is that those are my best and worst scenes. Like, right. It makes me cringe and just angry. It's okay for a teacher to call her student. No, it's not!
That was my, if anything's my worst, because that was almost overdone for me. Because I was freaked out. For her not, because we're building her delusion up, right?
Right.
We're building it up step by step, and rejection by rejection, she somehow gets stronger in her beliefs, and yet there she should have understood. Like, this kid's being put to bed by the babysitter at 8 o'clock, and she's calling to say hi, and she doesn't recognize that this is fucked up, like thoroughly fucked up. And she's doing it. She knows she's doing it after she talks to her kids and has this big, you know, throwdown argument with them. She's got to know there,
She's using it as her escape.
She doesn't. She still doesn't know. And that's how you know her delusions are at a fever pitch leading into the midpoint. So you're scared for this entire plot. Again, the parallel with the pedophilia and how kids have been groomed around the world for centuries, for thousands of years.
Great job by Maggie Gyllenhaal, too, for pulling it off.
There's a lot going on in this script. So this is definitely a cautionary tale. It's kind of also a metaphor, Mike, for some final thoughts here. It's a metaphor for how young and new writers get shot down early in their careers. There's a lot of that I feel makes some sense.
Really?
And how you could totally go. I mean, think about it. We're critics now. We've been creatives for a while. At least, I've definitely been a creative for a while. And, you know, you could go the other route and just be an art appreciator. I mean, you could do both is going to be my thesis to this whole thing. And we still do both. And I do both. But this is how you can go about it the wrong way.
Yeah.
You can piggyback on somebody else's creativity and certainly to use all these things as a thematic choice and to weave them together is very strong in a narrative sense. It rings true to me on that other level, even though it's lower and it could be overtaken by the subtext of the quote unquote grooming of a child for kidnapping kind of story. But there's a lot going on. There's multiple layers. It works on all three of those layers, like I said.
Yeah. Final thoughts for me here. This is just this movie. Like I said, it's a very. Why can't I ever think of the word? What's a word that I want that's not enrapturing or enveloping?
Engrossing?
Engrossing. Thank you. Good God. It's a very engrossing experience when it's with you and when you're in front of it. For whatever reason, I don't think the heroinism of it stuck with me, if I can make up a word to follow up a word I couldn't find.
Heroinism.
The heroinism. I don't know if that's because she's finally with the cops.
Right.
She had a sufficient demise at the end
of
it.
Oh, we're against her.
Right.
I mean, there's no
exactly.
question.
Exactly. But maybe if they would let her escape before the cops got there, I'd have more marks for it, or at least try to go back home or something like that.
I think the filmmakers are against her. The every character in the movie is against her. Everybody knows she's dead wrong except for her.
I would love to have seen her husband's reaction to all this too.
Yeah.
To see when it comes, because he's in the dark the entire movie essentially.
Right.
Great movie. Really, really, really strong movie. I don't know if it gets her Academy play, like we said. I don't know if anything gets an Oscar nomination out of this, but look, you don't need to have an Oscar-nominated movie to be a good movie and a solid watch.
To me, this is a it's to me, this is an outcry that Sarah Colangelo and Maggie Gyllenhaal are ready to take that next step.
Yeah.
And win an Oscar and be nominated. Like Sarah.
It's news about, for Sarah Colangelo, I think. Maggie Gyllenhaal's been there for
She's been nominated before, but like let's climb the mountain. Let's, you know,
yeah,
one good
you.
Movie, two good movies, three good movies. So that works as a narrative in many cases for Oscar winners. So this one, if this one's on the fringe, maybe next year she's nominated. Maybe we're getting her.
I will say the 6.7 on IMDb, it's there's way more here than a 6.7.
I would figure audience would recoil from
this. Cringe about it, yeah.
Because you got all that subtext about pedophilia. You got all that, you know, kids are being put in a compromising
precarious situation. Yeah,
so that's terrible. And people have fond memories of their kindergarten teachers, right?
I think one of the lessons from here is if you think you are the master and the one to cultivate, and you have a gift been pointed at from God,
yeah,
as
you
the
better
one
be
to
that
disseminate.
Master.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe don't have as big of an ego.
Yeah, you're right. You're right to say that it's all ego and there's just a power struggle going on here. And even in something as small and regular as a kindergarten class, if you have power over these kids and you are corrupted by that power in a way, that's effed up. And it can happen on the small. Power corrupts as an operating theme here.
Absolute power corrupts, absolutely.
Yes, sir. But grades, Michael, I have a B+87 for this one. I thought it was very strong.
Oh, well, not 3 points. I'm an 85. I'm a B, so it's 2 points.
Yeah, it's a very strong one.
It's worth a watch. Definitely well worth a watch. And another one that you're probably not going to want to go out partying all night after if you see, but...
Yeah, it's like a Monday night movie. It's a Tuesday night movie or something.
Definitely one that's worth your time, and we want to know if you have spent your time on it. What do you think about The Kindergarten Teacher and about Maggie Gyllenhaal's Oscar chances? Sarah Colangelo in that conversation. As well, you can reach out to us. We love hearing your thoughts, comments, and concerns. Mike, and Oscar on Facebook. Mike, and Oscar on Instagram. MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine. Mike, and Oscar .com at gmail.com and on Reddit. We are also available everywhere you hear podcasts, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, etc. Michael?
Can you imagine how great Mozart was as a kid? We're impressed with this kid.
Well, he was cultivated by kings and queens.
Right, we're impressed with this kid, but in terms of, like, but they knew. They were, you know, the guardians of great music, the stewards of great music.
What if they just decided he was? And, like...
I doubt that.
Johnny Zart
was
like,
probably like
better.
On the piano, Johnny Zart. So yes, Johnny Zart was—he was left behind.
Yeah.
That's the wisdom.
It's a sad, sad day.
Jimmy Roy and Johnny Zart—no chance for them.
Thanks for listening, guys. We'll check you out in a couple days.
See ya.